The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavuot Tov, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavuot Tov, yeah, it's unfortunately still a very, very frantic situation in Israel. But before we get on to talking about some of the more serious stuff, of course, we had the Eurovision over the weekend. Israel's entry was knocked out in the semifinals, so it didn't appear in the final broadcast on Saturday evening. Some of us think we are quite relieved that we didn't have to hear it again at the final stage. But of course, we are sad that
Ukrainian song was no better. The one that
The Ukrainian song was just from Ukraine, right? And yeah, so therefore, exactly. Obviously, they were the big winners as expected. Interestingly, the president in Ukraine, Zelensky, has said next year they would like to host the Eurovision in Mariupol. Now, for those of us who have seen recent pictures of Mariupol, you sort of wonder how we're going to get from here to there in the space of a year. But I'm all for it. Let's have it.
Mm, absolutely, if they can. Okay, lots to talk about in terms of the situation with the journalist, what's going on in Jenin, the funeral. Let's start with the Israeli counterterrorism soldier who was shot and killed on a Friday. Tell us about this.
Yes, so this was a very, very experienced counterterrorism officer who was active in Jenin on Friday. He had gone into Jenin with Yamam, which is the elite counterterrorism unit. He claimed before he was shot that he's been through a huge amount in the 20 years that he served in counterterrorism, but that on Friday, there were thousands of bullets being fired towards the IDF soldiers and their vehicles. And he said it was indescribable what was going on in Jenin on Friday morning. That was before he was shot in the back and killed, leaving a wife and six children. Noam Raz was also posthumously elevated in his rank to Chief Warrant Officer. Rav Nagad is the new rank that he's been given posthumously as a result of his many, many years of amazing service to Yamam, to counterterrorism, and to the State of Israel. He was described as a brave, professional, and humble soldier, and he apparently participated in hundreds of counterterrorism operations, endangering himself and saving many lives along the way. But it shows what a hotbed of activity was happening in Jenin on Friday, with all the fire, the light arms fire that the IDF troops were coming under. They'd gone into Jenin in order to try to arrest a particular individual who they suspected of being involved with terror activities. In the end, they did manage to arrest him, but not before, unfortunately, one of our own soldiers was killed and a number of other people in Jenin also injured. Apparently 13 people were injured, two of them quite seriously. In the end, however, the people who were being sought out were found. But unfortunately, these activities, these operations come at a high price to us. And of course, it also goes to expose what exactly was happening in Jenin, not only on Friday, but indeed in the days leading up to Friday, and of course in some of the activities that surrounded the death of the journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, that we're going to talk about in a short while, exactly what happened at her funeral. But just before we get there, there have been a number of incidents even reported this morning while I've been thinking about what I'm going to say to you guys. And I just picked up on just a few stories. First of all, in Issawiya, which is a sort of a separate town which forms part of the greater Jerusalem area, on the east side of Jerusalem, an Israeli man was apparently attacked by a mob and lynched last night. Now, this is just another indication of exactly what's going on in Jerusalem at the moment, that an Israeli, a Jewish man, can't even walk through the streets of Issawiya, which is really part of the United City of Jerusalem, which is, of course, Israel's capital. Apparently, he was pepper sprayed. He was attacked. There was a paramedic who came onto the scene to give him first aid and to assist him, but he was quite seriously injured in the process. We understand this morning that a person has been arrested, a Palestinian who was armed with an axe and who was apparently had been roaming around certain parts of the Judean Samaria for over an hour before he was apprehended, apparently trying to seek out somebody who might have been isolated, somebody on their own that he might be able to attack. And so this is what, unfortunately, we're experiencing at the moment in terms of this wave of terror. People coming out with a specific intention, whether they be lone wolf attacks. We're not quite sure who this guy was, who was arrested this morning, whether it's a lone wolf, whether it's something that's been premeditated, put up, someone who's been put up to something by one of the bigger organizations. So, you know, the situation is extremely tense. And just, you know, going back to some of the comments that you made during the time that you were here, Howard, things were very, very tense indeed. We hope that things would calm a little down following Yom Ha'atzmaut, following, you know, the tensions of the month of Ramadan. Unfortunately, that's not been the case. And of course, yesterday was marked as Nakba Day. This is the equivalent of a disaster, in the words in the Arabic term, the day upon which the State of Israel was declared. Actually, it wasn't even yesterday, which was the 15th of May, but in fact, the state was declared on the 14th of May. We mark it in our calendar as Hebi'iyar, the fifth day of the Hebrew month of Iyar, and that's exactly why we had Yom Ha'atzmaut a week or two ago. But it was the 14th of May, the day before yesterday, and it is common amongst the Palestinians in the Arab world to mark it as Nakba Day. And in fact, even the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas made a statement saying that, again, inciting people against Israel and saying that the Palestinian Authority is going to continue to support and to pay for those people, those families, those victims who have been involved in attacks against Israel. The budget, the money that's being paid, the so-called pay-for-slave policy followed by the Palestinian Authority will continue to be enforced and will continue to be followed. That is according to the words of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas on the occasion of Nakba Day.
All right. Tell us what happened at this funeral.
Yeah, so the events at the funeral were not particularly good from any angle that you look at it. And I happened to look at some coverage that was being shown by Sky News on Friday, and what they showed was quite horrifying. It wasn't a good, it didn't reflect well on Israel. What you saw was a group of border policemen completely kitted out with helmets and batons and with chest shields, going towards the group of mourners who were standing outside a church in Jerusalem. They had the coffin of Shireen Abu Akleh on their shoulders. And at some point, the coffin even looked like it might have been dropped by those people as the group of police came up. And the explanation that was being given by the Sky News broadcast at the time was that this is Israeli police attacking mourners who are trying to take the coffin of Shireen Abu Akleh from that church to her burial site, which was in the old city of Jerusalem. And that was the way that it was described. Following that, the police came out making a statement saying that what had happened was that the coffin had actually been taken from the family by protesters who'd come along to make the funeral into a protest event. They had taken the coffin from the family, and the police had intervened in order to try to return the coffin and the body back to the care of the family. It was the agreement apparently was that the coffin would be taken to the burial site by a hearse. And here these people, apparently, according to at least what the police had said, had come to take the coffin away and to try to create their own set of events which weren't part of the plans for the funeral. Now, Anton Abu Akleh, which is Shireen Abu Akleh's brother, has made a statement to say the police version is not correct. And he says that they have misrepresented the situation, that the body actually in the coffin was not taken away from the family, that the police had tried to create some agreement with the family about how the funeral would be conducted. The family didn't necessarily agree to any of the conditions, but it seems as if though what happened here was that the police were trying to enforce some of the conditions that they laid down for the funeral. Now, let's just be clear about the situation here. This was Friday in Israel's capital of Jerusalem, a funeral which had turned into a protest. The police had apparently requested of the family that no Palestinian flags be waved, that no chanting, that no protest go on in the city of Jerusalem as part of that funeral. The family say they couldn't agree to that because they had really little control over what was going on. But clearly, this turned into a massive protest event, and the police were trying to keep safety and security surrounding the event. They'd apparently agreed that the body would not be borne by people carrying on their shoulders to the burial site, that it would go by hearse, and the hearse would then take the body to the burial site, and that would somehow prevent this whole procession and protest walking through the streets of Jerusalem from the Jaffa Gate, in fact, right from the Jaffa Gate through the old city of Jerusalem to the burial site, apparently next to her father and mother, who are also buried in the cemetery within the walls of the old city of Jerusalem. So when the police came in to try to enforce what they thought had been agreed, that was when the whole protest carried on. Now, there will be a police investigation into the events and the conduct of the forces at the funeral. It really didn't look good. And any person who would have been commanding the police should have considered what the outside view would be in terms of all the world cameras being trained upon this particular event, and all of a sudden you see police coming in to attack the group of people who are bearing the coffin on their shoulders. It just kind of didn't look good, and it didn't matter what the excuses or the reasons were why they were doing this. It was just something that was always going to land up in a bad place as far as the police are concerned.
Look, it didn't need to land up in such a bad place, though. I mean, it did. As much as we try to find, and certainly supporters of Israel try to find another angle to it, it just looks really bad.
It looks terrible. It was really not well carried out from a public relations point of view. Disastrous. Mm. Absolutely disastrous. It was obvious and clear that the world's cameras were all going to be there, and there should have been some consideration given to the conduct of the police under those circumstances, because, as I say, it doesn't matter how good your reasoning or your excuses as to why you did that, it was never, ever, ever going to land up in a good place. Mm. And this was clearly not good, and particularly after the controversy surrounding her death. In the meantime, the investigation into her death continues. The Palestinian Authority have made clear that they have no intention of cooperating with Israel or releasing the bullet for forensic investigation to determine exactly who fired that bullet. They don't mind international community getting involved, but they've said that they will not cooperate with Israel in terms of investigating this, which makes things very difficult, because obviously Israel stands accused of having killed her, but has no right to be able to defend the accusation. And as I said before, it doesn't really matter who killed her. She was in a firing zone. She was in a war zone. For all intents and purposes, there was crossfire going on. I mean, this was one of the things that she thrived upon doing in her reporting career. It was dangerous. It was always going to be dangerous. And whether the bullet was fired by one of the Palestinian groups or whether it was fired by the IDF doesn't really matter, I think, at the end, because clearly this was not intentional, not by one side or by the other. So I don't think that there's any blame that really can be placed on one
terrible,
group or the other.
Horrible episode, really, really. And unfortunately, talks to so many of the issues around this, the way in which these issues are reported, the focus, the bias, the nervousness of Israelis. It's just talks. Unfortunately, it's almost like a perfect storm, which is quite awful. Wish for that this whole thing will move on, and we can get back to some form of relative normality. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you, as always.